All right, so we have now, by prior action, moved up item 8, which is a presentation from Milliman on the liquidity sub-portfolio review. So let me see who I've got here. Is who's handling this lead in, Gail? I'm looking for my agenda.
Yeah, so I wanted to introduce, we do have John Botsford here from Milliman. The work has been completed on the December 31st, 2020 other post-employment benefits valuation report, and John is here to present that report today. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to John Botsford.
Excellent. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Gail. And thank you, members of the board, for accommodating this my schedule today. In the days of the pandemic and Zoom meetings, sometimes we get double booked. So moving me up a little bit was very, very appreciative, so I can get to my other meeting later today. It's good to see you again. I'm really happy to be here. I hope next time we meet, it will be actually in person as opposed to over Zoom, but we'll all be patient. So what I'm going to do is share my screen and see if every can hang on just a second. Can everyone see my screen?
Yes.
Perfect, thank you. Okay. I'm gonna cover the actuarial valuation report that we just completed. Gonna be somewhat brief because I know you've got a lot of agenda items, and also because the news is actually very good. Your liabilities, our unfunded liabilities, you are now up to 91.6% funded. This compares to a couple of years ago when we last did the full valuation and your funded percentage was 70.6%. This, if you go back, this starts from 0% just a few years ago. So you went from zero and then you went to about 50% and all the way up to almost 100% funded. You had a plan in place adopted in, I believe it was in June of 2019, to get to 100% over a 10-year period. But due to what occurred in the last couple of years, you're actually very, very close now to 100% in a much more rapid time frame. So the reasoning being, one of the reasons is the net fiduciary position, as you can see, also known as plan assets, increased by over $1 million, about $1.3 million. But that's only half the story. The other part of the story is you're on the liability side. You see it's actually slightly decreased. And this is despite the fact that we lowered the interest rate from 6.75% down to 6.5% based on projections of investment returns and so on and so forth, and adjustment to that. The reason why it went down, the story is because the benefits are based on health plan premiums that are set by CalPERS. And we assume a trend each year, a medical trend, so that those premiums are expected to go up each year with medical trend, which is typically runs in the 5 to 6% range, at least for the first few years, and then it tapers down. But what really happened over the past couple of years is the CalPERS premiums actually stayed flat or even came down a little bit. And so, you're projecting 5-6% a year, and then you get a flat or even a reduction in premium. That can result in a 10% plus difference in your liability. And that's why you're seeing that drop. Does mean there's going to be some volatility that should those premiums go up in the future, you could see an increase. But being in the position that you're in right now, very well funded, even if that does happen, you're still going to be very much in line to, on your 10-year funding target that you set just just a couple of years ago. So some of the changes I just wanted to take you through and back up a little bit in this report. There was a couple of minor plan changes. It really had to do with the eligibility to receive retiree medical benefits. There was initially there was a 15-year total service requirement, including 5 years of SACERA for most employees. And that was changed, the 15-year total service requirement, you know, that was service dating back to when SACERA staff employees were at the county, was just changed to 5 years of SACERA service. There is still a requirement where, you know, it's a tiered benefit, so that if you're hired before a certain date, I think it was back in, you know, or before 2010, you would receive a higher premium subsidy than if you're hired after that date. But there was a time frame over the next few years where people would have had to have continued to wait for that full 15 years of total service to be eligible. And now they become eligible now with that 5 years of service. So that had a slight increase in the liabilities of about 260,000, as you can see there. The other change that had an impact on liabilities was the SACERA share of dental premiums. On the medical premium side, the way it was written is, as medical and premiums increase, there's a 50-50 share between what the retiree would pay for that increase and what the and what SACERA would pay. So if premiums increase $30 a month in a given year, the retiree's share of the premium would go up $15 a month, and SACERA would pick up the other 15. Dental premiums, though, the way the contracts were written in the past, there wasn't that provision that was, you know, that was specified in the contract that said, you know, that this is also going to be a 50-50 sharing. You know, it's unclear whether that was, you know, the intent was always there or whether it was a change, but we noted the language did change in the agreements to also apply that 50-50 sharing with of premium increases for dental as well, for the group that's eligible for them. And that was about 68,000, as you can see. So overall, a total change of about $330,000. That does get recognized immediately. So any plan changes under GASB rules, as you're familiar with under pension, it's analogous for retiree medical, that gets the immediate recognition. For plan experience, as I mentioned, you know, the big driver of the experience was that the health premiums did not increase as expected over the last couple of years. And that was almost entirely the result of that $517,000 gain that you see that we saw on the where the liabilities actually came down a little bit as opposed to going up. There, overall, the rest of the experience on the you know, the liability experience of all the demographic assumptions were almost dead on. That doesn't mean every single individual component of the assumptions were dead on, but in aggregate, all the assumptions were very, very close to experience. So a couple of changes. We did make some assumption changes and did an assumption review from the prior valuation. The health cost trend, but you know, I mentioned that we had the premiums did not go up as expected, but you know, looking forward, we're not going to assume that that's going to occur forever. So we're obviously still having a health cost trend as we've set in the past. However, the excise tax was repealed since our last valuation. And this is the, you know, what was referred to as the Cadillac tax. And what that meant is that high cost plans were going to have to pay a 40% excise tax to the federal government on premiums that were above a certain level. That wasn't in effect today, but it was projected to become effective into the future because the level that the government set was increasing at a much lower rate than what we expected health plan premiums to increase. We removed that excise tax, and that resulted in about a $260,000 reduction in the total liability. Demographic rates, we made a couple of changes. Again, this is a very small group, so it's 57 actives and 4 retirees. So we're not going to be able to do studies the same way we're going to be able to do. You'd be able to do studies on your pension group where you've got, you know, several thousand participants. But we do look at the experience as best we can, and we also look at the SACERA pension valuation, and you know, in absence of other you know, direction or guidance that we can get from looking at the data, you know, we're going to lean on the SACERA pension valuation a little bit. And so we made those updates, but you can see it was only about a $10,000 difference. It's very small. The other change was single retirees. So we had an assumption of when people retire, you're either single or you're married. And so there's a cost differential there, but also you may have a dependent child under age 26 for a period of time. And what we assumed a portion, about half or so of retirees with spouses had some sort of a dependent coverage, dependent child. But we also assumed single retirees had dependent coverage, or at least 30% of them. This was a carryover from what we observed in the county plan. And when we first started doing these valuations, we really didn't have any data on this group in terms of elections of, you know, single retirees, whether they're going to elect child coverage. And it looks like this group, at least the current retirees, none of the single ones have elected child coverage. And looking at the elections of the actives, it looks like that the coverage of single people with that are covering dependent children is just much lower than what we saw in the county. And so we've ended up removing that. And that was about a $232,000 gain. We'll continue to watch it if there are single retirees in the future that start to elect child coverage. We'll certainly, you know, make an adjustment, but it seemed like we were overstating the liabilities a little bit with that assumption. It was just a little bit too high. And so we've removed it for this valuation. And that's the impact you see there. And finally, as I alluded to earlier, we did make a discount rate change. This had an increase of $145,000. And, you know, basically, you know, every valuation we assess, the expected return on plan assets based on your investment portfolio. it may be a similar story in the pension valuation, but you know, there's really two factors that are pushing that discount rate down a little bit. One is interest rates have come down quite a bit, as you all know. And as interest rates are in a lower interest rate environment, you know, initially you see an increase in the market value of your bond holdings and fixed income. But any future money coming into those funds is in future, you know, it is going to be depressed as you invest new money at a lower interest rate. And so that's going to have an effect of pulling down fixed income returns on any new money that's coming in. The other is on the equity side. There tends to be a pattern where, you know, in terms of expected future returns of what's called reversion to the mean, is a term that's often used. And what that really means is that when you have years such that what we just went through in 2020 with very high investment returns, and 2019 was as well, that there's the notion that the market becomes a little bit overvalued, and that the returns in the past, the real high returns, aren't going to continue, and there's going to be a kind of a reversion back to a mean return over the long term period of time. The same works in reverse. If there's been a period of very poor returns, the expected future returns tend to be a little bit higher, and you might see a bump in those returns. Now, just given the period that we're in with those two factors, That's why we've adjusted that discount rate downward from 6.75%. assumptions. I also want, as I mentioned, you're over 90% funded, and I want to share with you the actuarially determined contribution. If I can find it here, just a second. So the actuarially determined contribution. Yeah, here it is. Because you've had such a good return, and your unfunded liability is down to only $426,000, and it was closer to a couple million before. When we amortize that piece, it's only $66,000. So your actuarially determined contribution for 2021 is actually only going to be about $268,000. We still have the service costs that we're tracking. But in terms of, contributions, this is what you do to be able to, and $66,000 is simply an amortization over the remaining 8 years of that $458,000 unfunded liability. Again, as I mentioned, this is going to be subject to movements in both assets as well as liabilities, to the extent that you see medical premiums, moving up or down in a direction that's different than what's assumed. And then finally, the annual OPEB expense. So this is the accounting expense. That's $458,000. And again, as I mentioned, one of the reasons why that's a lot higher than your actuarially determined contribution, there is going to be a little bit of a mismatch there. But in looking at the expense, here it is. The big thing is as I mentioned, the effect of the plan changes. That full $329,000, that under the new GASB rules, that doesn't get amortized over a period of years. It gets recognized immediately, and so that's why you're seeing that $458,000. If we take that out, you're back down to closer to about 200 or so. Or under 200,000, closer to what your ADC is. I'm going to pause there because I kind of went through everything and quickly. But are there any questions I can answer on your actuarial valuation?
I had one, but let me ask board members. Mike, did you have a question?
Yes, I do. On page 4 of your section 1 of your summary, about the middle of the page, where they're talking the coverage, election rates, and spouse age differences. I'm sure this is just a semantics thing, but it says the female spouses are assumed to be 3 years younger than the male spouses. We have assumed 50% of the retirees and spouse coverage will elect coverage for a dependent child until age 65. They're going to cover the child till age 65? I'm assuming mean that the retiree is age 65.
No, it means that they're going to cover the dependent child until the retiree reaches age 65.
Right. The dependent child will age out. Looks like you're going to cover the child till they're age 65.
Yeah, it's until the retiree is age 65. You're correct there. Okay. Generally, the dependent child, we'd assume that they'd be covered until age 26.
Exactly.
But we don't necessarily know the ages of the dependent children. In some cases, when you have actives, the child might not even be born yet, and may be covered as a retiree. We kind of make an assumption that, they're covered until age 65. And then once the retiree reaches age 65, it's assumed that the dependent child would no longer be eligible by aging out at 26. But you're right. We can add something to kind of correct that, so it doesn't look like they're going to cover that child till age 65.
I thought maybe it was a test.
You were paying attention, Mike.
John, how comfortable are you with the 6.5% assumption, interest assumption?
I'm okay with it. I want to see if I have I thought I had an update of, or more information on how we developed that assumption. Did I have some? Yeah, here it is. Yeah, so it's 2.75% inflation. you know, that in the short term, that might be kind of high, that inflation, but longer term, you know, there's a lot of, a lot of people think there is going to be some inflation that's coming. Now, I know we all said that in 2010 and everybody was dead wrong. We went 20 or 10 years. But might be a little bit different this time. And there are some economists saying, yes, short term, it's going to be a little bit depressed, but with the amount of federal stimulus that's occurring, that there's going to be some inflation that's going to occur. And so, you know, that's 2.75. And then as you can see, you know, yes, the fixed incomes pieces here are all below 3%. So that's right in line with, you know, what we'd expect in inflation. And you'll notice that the, except for the, you know, really except for just the international piece, we're projecting, and this is long-term, you know, large and small cap domestic equities are under 7%. And, you know, so when you look at that, you know, kind of a sort of a sniff test, you know, I mean, this is a model, of course, we put in and do everything. And, but at the end of the day, we've got to come back, step back a little bit and do the sniff test and say, does this make sense? And I'd say, you know, long-term equities of under 7%, large caps at 6.3, over, you know, a lot of people would say, well, that might be even a little bit low. I don't necessarily think it's low, but I wouldn't say this is high either. I'd say this is a pretty good guess of what we might see, you know, over the long term.
Any other questions of John? I had one. You mentioned your interest rate assumption based on, I think you phrased it, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you phrased it as a decline in rates generally. And it seems to me we've been in a low interest rate environment for a long time. There may have been sequential small steps downward that the Fed has taken to the point where they can't take too many more, but weren't we already in an extremely low interest rate environment to begin with?
We were in a low interest rate environment, but it got even lower, particularly when you look at corporate bond yields. So not just what the Feds are doing, but the longer, you know, investment grade bond yields, those have been coming down. And even over the last couple of years, they were more in the mid to high threes. And, you know, they came all the way down to about 2.5%. And certainly at the end of, you know, December of 2020, you know, those average, you know, corporate AA corporate bond yields were down at 2.5%. They've since come up a little bit, but they're still pretty low. They're about 3 now. So they've come back a little bit. But I think even though we were in a lower interest rate environment, it got even lower.
Okay.
So yeah.
That's helpful to put some color on. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else? Any other questions for John? I'm looking at my screen here. All right. Well, hearing none, thank you for the presentation and report. Gail, I am a little challenged. So is this an action item? I can't bring up my agenda at the moment.
No, it's not an action item.
All right. So if there are no further questions, John, thank you. You can maybe timely get off to your other adventure and look forward to seeing you again in person.
Will do, right on time. Thank you, everyone. It was great to see you all again.
Excellent.
Thanks,
okay. Gina. Bye-bye.
Bye. Take care.